Welcome to Time to Show Up, the podcast and community that supports you to flourish and grow in your personal and professional life.
There's no better time to show up than now.
So, thank you for joining us for our final episode at the end of our very first series of Time to Show Up. And we are going to do this kind of as a grand review episode. We have our little reviews after each interview. We're going to be reflecting on the major themes that have come up across the season. But we thought to give you a little bit of context, Natalie and I would say a little bit about ourselves, why we're doing this, and how we found ourselves here.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if you want to kick it off, maybe with how we...
With our meet cute.
I think so, yes.
So Erin and I first met at my book launch, which was quite a few years ago now. And I was just starting to carve my own path in the world of psychology, marketing, persuasive tech. And you were at a very particular point in your journey at that stage. Do you want to say a few words about that?
So we famously got to know each other with me being a little bit cheeky at her book launch.
I think it's called a heckle.
It was a little bit, maybe a little bit of a heckle. And now I realize that the heckle came out of a sense of envy, right? Mm-hmm. So actually, Natalie was really important for me in realizing that what I was doing at the time, I was an academic at the time. Mm-hmm. I was writing a very heavy academic book. It was Social Media Week where we met.
Yeah.
And Natalie was talking about this. She had this really beautiful book, like beautifully designed book, and she's talking about social media, which is what I was researching about. And I thought, gosh, there's something that she's doing that I want, because I loved the therapeutic side mm-hmm. of my work, but the academic side of my work was a bit grueling at that time. So that manifested in a cheeky heckle, which I kind of regret now, but it opened up our...
I don't regret it. It was a charged moment. And actually, sometimes the charged moments, even if they're a bit like wrangly or whatever, are kind of the punctuation parts of a sentence. Like, it makes you pay attention.
Yes.
And it did. And then, you know, we ended up becoming very good friends off the back of it.
We did. And we had so many conversations, didn't we, over time about which ways our careers were going. We're both creating portfolio careers. You're doing public speaking. You did another book. I was coming out of the university, setting out on my own. And we supported each other and just really found a common love for psychology, but also psychology outside the strictly clinical sense. Like, how can we use psychology to understand the internet or social media or the world of work?
Yeah, and I think also kind of thinking, zooming forward a few years, in the last 7 years, as you most of you will probably know this, I ended up accidentally moving to Barcelona after what was meant to be a brief 3 month sabbatical, and I just never properly came back, really. And during that time, I think it's one of these things where when big life changes happen, sometimes forced upon you, other times, you know, you make choices and then you kind of take the leap, perhaps with greater intention or conscious awareness. However it happens, it kind of raises a lot of deep questions, including things like, what am I doing with the time that I have? What are other people doing? Like you mentioned with the heckle, what are other people doing that I'm longing for? Mm. What would need to be in place in my life to be able to take more risks?
And helping each other, right? Yeah. Like you were, I mean, God bless her, she was really generous with me after that initial kind of acerbic introduction.
We went for cocktails.
We ended up on a panel together. I've asked Natalie for advice over the years. She's asked me for advice over the years. And I think it's a really good example of a kind of... people are afraid to ask, I think.
Yeah.
And like a kind of generosity. You had a really great generosity and it was very helpful.
We did too.
I think we also want to bring this to bear to this podcast and the community we've developed and all that kind of
stuff. And also this kind of, when it comes to generosity, there's obviously it's culturally embedded in terms of the expectations we have about how much we can bring to a conversation or to someone that we are friends with or perhaps that we don't know quite as well, or even family members. But there is something really beautiful and liberating about taking the chance to ask for help from others. And it's something which, you know, at least in British culture, we're not really encouraged to do. And I think for me, at least, there's this kind of very strong urge to just blast my way through that taboo and just be like, what do you need? If I can help you, I can. And so many of my friends from different parts of the world have that too. And it's just without an expectation that we'll each be able to fix each other's problems, so to speak. But there is a generosity that is vibrant and alive and there to be tapped into in interpersonal relationships, but also in our wider webs and communities, which actually is one of the reasons why we set up this community and the boot camp, to kind of create a contained environment in which it's safe to ask for help or to offer help.
And share experience and what you've learned from failure. Mm. And I think when we're talking about generosity, it brings us to our champion interviews, doesn't it?
Because yes, it does.
They were really generous with us and we were really clear with them when we announced the project that this was really going to be a personal interview, that we were interested in what they've done, but we are more interested in how they got there in their personal stories. So maybe we take a little bit of time to think about our favorite bits and what we learned and what we want to learn more about.
Yeah. So we had to do a bit of prep for this because there was just so much rich kind of content. There's got to be a better
there's
word
so
than
much.
That. But we're going to start from the beginning because that's the easiest place to start, with Dr. Roz Watts and how she was yearning to break out of a traditional working environment, which I think many of us can relate to if we've been there, and kind of wanting to figure out a way forward to break through some of those structural or systemic challenges and pursue a more aligned path when it comes to individuation and transforming the way that she approached things so that it was more coherent with who she wanted to be and how she wanted to turn up in her work and beyond. What were some of the things that most stood out for you?
Yeah, I think with her, I was on a similar story, right? Because we were both in academia. We were both felt a bit hamstrung by academia and moving out of that. So I think it has come up with a lot of interviews about how you, because those structures also are safe, right?
Yeah.
So on one hand, they're constraining. On the other hand, they're safe. This will come up in the John Hot Seat interview, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think it's really interesting that her work happens to be in psychedelics. And when people talk about the power of psychedelics, it tends to be their capacity to shake that frame enough that you're like, okay, that was kind of a kick in the pants. You know, I might really need to activate change to keep something alive going. So I thought there was a nice, the content and the process in that one was really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Roz, I mean, there's so much more to discover. Listen to the interview if you haven't. Then we had SJ Watson, totally different industry, creative, but had worked as an audiologist, wasn't
That's right, yeah.
So working in, again, a structured environment in the NHS, and then decided that it was time to follow this deep longing, heart's desire to kind of pursue this creative path.
There were so many interesting conversations there about what success meant, what drives success, this kind of, you know, internal, not negative voice was part of it, but also this desire to express creativity. And I think a big one for that is about doing the work. That's what came up for me, right? Like the book ain't going to write itself kind of a thing. It's part of why we have the, not just for writing, but the mindful deep work sessions that we run in the community. The people that are coming to that are just really finding that when you just set aside with intention 2 hours to work with support of others, this is like not much more to it than that kind of commitment to yourself. That was a big takeaway from SJ, Steve Watson, right? Like you have the desire, you have the dream, and then the sweat really needs to come in, and you need to make the time because the structures will make the time for you if you don't make the time within those structures to meet your passion.
And it sounds like the simplest thing in the world, and yet, at least in my life, it's hard. Like even just to say I'm going to carve out an hour a week, I don't know. That's why I think it's helpful to have that accountability and that rhythm of structure where you know that at a specific time each week there are other people expecting you to show up.
Yes.
If you're anything like me, it's like that conscientiousness kicks in and goes, oh, well, I can't drop the ball now because someone else is expecting my presence.
And also the honesty. So the way they're structured is people just come and we spend time online. We can set silent time together with an intentional kind of mindful induction. But at the end, people share really transparently about what that was like. So sometimes people will be like, 2 hours went by super fast, right? Other times it was like, that was grueling. It was like 5 hours. I just couldn't get myself in there. So it's just nice to be with people who are experiencing the same intention to do the work, but also that it's not always super easy.
Yeah, but at least you're doing it alongside one another.
Yes.
And then we had Alison Coward, which was a really wonderful interview. Many of the topics we covered explored how to overcome challenges and curveballs that we perhaps didn't expect, that can be really difficult when physical illness knocks at our door, when perfectionism is something that can somehow have a stranglehold on the ways that we want to do our work or show up in our lives. and taking the time, like being patient and compassionate with yourself, like having to really re-understand what it means to live in a way that is going to support your well-being and not just kind of pushing yourself through, because if you're not able to, you have to find a route around.
Yes, and how common it is that something hits us sideways, like a physical illness or having to take time off for stress or whatever it is, and that, yes, you can go into that and you can pull something out, but if you can become aware of it before that kind of stuff happens, that's really great. Mm-hmm. And also that dual edge of perfectionism, right? That you can be mean to yourself or you can be kind to yourself. You don't have to be mean to yourself to motivate yourself, and it can be hard for us to find our way there. I think, skipping ahead, I know, but Oliver Berkman said something about a blog post, you know, how to get stuff done while being nice to yourself or something. It's in the show notes, but I like that idea. You can still get stuff being done in a compassionate way.
Yeah. So then we had Lisa Marciano. Now, we're both massive fans of This Jungian Life, so this is a real treat for both of us. What did you most take away from our conversation with Lisa?
What really touched me is, I call that like our slow burn episode. Like, there were all of these clues along Lisa's life, from being a student to when she kind of found her voice through a number of synchronicities and stuff, and how if you listen in, you can hear this thing, and maybe you activate it super early, like Brian Solis did, or maybe it just takes a while and it expresses itself differently, which is how Lisa did it. So for me, it's just that listening in, you have different skills. If you're listening later in life, you have a whole different set of skills in which you can activate that, and she's done it so beautifully, finding her voice through her books and through This Jungian Life, which we're both in love with. And she wears great glasses too.
She does. She's got a lovely voice.
Yes.
We're fanning out here. Yes. So then we had, speaking of great voices, Hamid Sinow, which was one of my favorite interviews about creativity and how to be with and relate to some of the really challenging emotions that come up for us in life. So whether that's a sense of overwhelm or a bleakness that we can encounter, or just this raw sensitivity to life, to what's going on in the world, for the beauty of it and its sorrows. And it was a very tender, moving, powerful exploration of many of these things and how he's managed to navigate this. Again, back to the compassionate sort of sense, like some of these things don't necessarily get resolved because they're part of the human experience. And if you're someone who's more sensitive, the beauty of that with a creative side can be there, but there's also kind of the shadow side that we have to learn to be kind to rather than get rid of.
Yes, I think that was the learning for him in a way, right? The pain of being a sensitive human being and just experiencing all that pain, and how you manage that, because you don't manage it by becoming
numb,
less sensitive. I mean, that then you lose your connection to something. But I think also he threw a lot of our things like backwards in a sense, right? Thinking about it in a very different way. So we often think about expressing your flourishing kind of soul, right, as an intentional kind of a thing. And for him, it was like expressing this creativity first that almost by accident put him in the limelight, right, and brought fame, which had all of these other, like, really difficult challenges that came along. And it's an interesting puzzle to think about how we activate our creativity, whether with the intention of taking it somewhere or not. You know, you're writing poetry for yourself or for the world, and does it matter? I mean, I think it does, but I think these are some of the questions that arose.
Just a quick interjection there, because I know that you like Huberman, cheeky bro. It was a very interesting point that I saw recently between him and Rick Rubin, where Huberman asks, you know, how do you know when you're creating something that it's worth it? And Rick Rubin is like, it's not about it being worth it, like you're doing it because you feel the impulse to create. And I think that sometimes gets lost, especially if you're doing something creative and you're getting paid for it, when it becomes your professional career.
Yes.
It can get quite knotty.
It's a little bit of a Faustian deal, right? I'd love to do this for a living, and then it becomes a job, and it's like, oh, then there's all the, that came up in Steve Watson's, right? It's I've got to write 3 more books, and that's like, there's pressure and expectation and managing that. Yeah.
Game of Thrones all over again.
Yes.
So then we also spoke with Brian Solis, which was a very popular episode, and talking about reinvention and thinking back to Lisa as well. Like, there's sometimes this myth that we have to get everything right from the beginning when you're young, like who wrote that story that we have to adhere to it? And so thinking about midlife reinvention, carving your path, identifying the trends, the needs of others, and making a career for yourself, kind of a trajectory where you might not know what's coming next because you're blazing the trail. So you kind of, I think of it like almost as, you know, if you're a shooting star and you're in motion, if everyone's coming behind you, they can see the light that's falling behind your tail. If you're at the front,
yes,
you just see the darkness. Not in a kind of loaded way, but in the sense of you might not see what the next step is. And that's part of that stepping into the fertile void of not knowing what's ahead of you and having the courage somehow to move in that direction without the knowledge of where you'll end up.
And his concept of drive too, I found fascinating. That he was just so driven, right? That almost like he didn't even know where it was coming from. Yeah. It was just this had to thing. And we often talk about finding drive or what is that thing? And with him, it was really there. And then the question kind of came later on when it sort of changed, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, well, now I'm later in life. I've got my kids. I'm kind of moving in a different direction. If people know me for the tail in my comet.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, that's nice.
What are they going to know me for now? Yeah, yeah. That was really interesting.
And then we finished with Oliver Berkman. Do you want to say a few words about that?
Well, yeah, because I'm a big, Ollie fanboy. Yeah, well, I mean, I kind of, that was another, you know, I'm going to sound like this envious bastard, but like another one of those ones that kind of really made me think I want to be him back in the days, you know, when he was writing This Column Will Change Your Life. And I was like, this guy just gets to read all of psychology and write about it in The Guardian. And like, what an amazing job. And it was great to speak to him because there's paradox there too, you know, this idea about, you know, did I go into that because I wanted to heal myself? Mm. We teach what we need to learn for ourselves, but then what did he learn? And I think that's what was paradoxical about it. Like, there are all these things you can do, but then you really have to ask philosophical questions about why am I doing it and why do I need to be more productive and what is the end game? So I thought that turned into quite a philosophical
exploration.
Conversation,
And also the other thing is that you can read as many books as you want, listen to as many podcasts, until the cows come home. I never understood that expression. Anyway, until the cows or whatever an animal you like come home. But if you don't put any of the principles into practice, you're just reading or listening. Like, if you just pick one thing that is going to be useful and do it, you're likely to see change. So there was also that kind of conversation around like, how much do you need to input before you actually make a step in a different direction or an adjustment in a different direction.
If there were a correlation between self-help books read and positive change in people's lives, you know, we'd see massive change, right? Yeah. So they keep selling, we keep struggling with it, which is why we produce this great community that we'll be talking about, right? We can, you know, support each other to activate these things. And if you hear any of these ideas turn you on, do just check out our website at some stage and learn more about that. But we also did our hot seats too.
We did do our hot seats. So the hot seats were very courageous folk who were willing to subject themselves to our deep inquiry sessions, who were absolutely amazing.
I love them.
Me too. And I think they, as far as we've had follow-up sessions, have found these quite valuable.
Yes.
And our first was Athene, who we also have extra bonus content for, because we caught up with her after the review session, which was very exciting.
It was very, we won't give the game away, but it was really nice to hear.
The game away.
Yeah, it turned out terribly poor.
No, she did amazing. So, you know, from a place of, again, walking a fairly established route, let's say, in terms of the kind of medical role she was in, the role societally as a mother and a partner, and then inching some space into her life to go and play, to go to the forest, to sign up for a dance class, and to not be snagged into those cycles that we can get so hooked in of perfectionism and having to find the right, like, there was so much that she was so ready for.
She was so eloquent too about her stuckness, right? Like, anybody who's stuck and you haven't heard that one yet, like, there's hope, right? First, like, listen, and there's hope to come. I guess I want to say just something about the deep inquiry interview protocol. So we kind of, like, Natalie and I worked really hard on this protocol to take people through a journey of understanding how they came to where they are. And Athene was actually our first guinea pig for it.
She was.
Like, gentle but challenging. And I think it's actually, you know, we've tweaked it along the way, but it's a nice set of ways to go through an experience and really identify what's holding you back and where your risk level is to take that next step. And I think you really hear that in Athene and the follow-up content with her.
And actually, now it's on my mind, this is a good time to plug it. If you want to be taken through that kind of deep inquiry, structure, rigor, challenge, and compassionate guiding, we are bringing our members into the hot seat, those who have applied, who want to come in. So if you want to join us in that, you can. Again, just check out timetoshowup.org and you'll find your way. So after Athene, we then had John.
So John, I feel like there's some reflection in the champion interviews we were talking about that moving from structure into no structure. So he's someone who's been working in quite a high role in a big organization with a lot of responsibility, but a lot of structure, moving out into the entrepreneurial space. And it's a lot about him getting ready for the kind of risks that are out there that aren't in the structure. So then you have your safety and risk kind of thing spectrum, which I think is very, very clear in that interview. Like the, I'm almost ready to jump, but I just need to make sure this is right and this is right. And
It's like trying to be as prepared as you can. And actually it's, you know, it's when the mother or father bird would just kick the pigeon quite unceremoniously. But we don't really have mechanisms like that necessarily in our lives. There's someone just goes, you're ready enough, out you go.
Yes.
So it's an interesting stage to get to where you feel like you need to keep going with your readiness, but actually you just need to take the next step.
Yeah, I mean, I think we talk a lot about fear in a way in all of the episodes. And also Antonio, who's our last hot seat interviewer, who wants to be more actively creative in the creative fields. He's kind of facilitating other people's creativity at the moment. And how does he take those next steps? Because you could see the reticence. You could see he doesn't quite believe in himself enough to feel that he's going to be received well. Mm. But he could also hear that that was a belief that could be.
Yeah.
It's really sweet, I thought.
It's like that level of awareness. And then there's just so many elements to it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like self-awareness, impetus, or like something that allows you to just take some steps, realize that things are...
Get the help, too.
Yeah, to get the help.
Ask for it.
Yeah. And then see that the world is not going to come crashing down, because I think sometimes that's our fear, right? It's like, this is something that's unknown. I don't know what to do next. The stakes are really high. I'm not 20 anymore. I've built a career in one particular direction. What do I do? I can't stay where I am, but it feels really risky to go somewhere else. It's kind of all of these different elements, how to navigate these in a way that feels supportive, but also... you know, that you can take that step and not end up
absolutely
stuck.
I feel a little bit proud of the series, like the season.
Me too.
Yeah, because it feels like I think we both do, we really believe that it is possible to flourish more in our working lives, right? There are more challenges for some than for others, but even in the space of challenge, how you sit in that space. But I think the reality principle is really evident in these interviews. So what are the challenges in the way we're not just saying, you know, believe in yourself, get out there, live your best life, and it's going to be great, right? It's like, it's scary, it's risky. Mm. People have been generous and open with us about those risks. And we really hope that it's had an effect on you as a listener and given you some inspiration as well. Yeah.
So,
on that note,
we
know that it's really hard to take learning from ideas and podcasts and books and actually apply them in a way that is actionable to create change in your life. And that is why...
that is why we're wanting to help you put these ideas into practice. If you're at the point where you are ready to take that next step, and by ready, I just mean a sense of there's a hunger, a longing, you don't know what that next step necessarily is, or maybe you do and you just want some encouragement. If you're at that point where you're like, something has to change, we've got a bootcamp that we are launching called How to Transform Your Career, and it will take you through a structured, supportive, empowering process within the foundations and container of our amazing members community. And you can find out more about all of that at timetoshowup.org.
So thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed our first season. We look forward to giving you the second. And in the meantime, check out our website and community.
See you soon.
Bye.